So I guess we'll get started here. I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Paul Dietz. And I'd like to say briefly, being a compiler, you know, writer, implementer, I really owe a debt of gratitude, and I think all of us in the Lisp community owe a lot of gratitude for all the work he's done that I assume he's going to be talking about. An exhausting set of tests for ANSI compliance that are brutal, you know, on the compiler. But, you know, it's just like the kind of work that, when we write compilers, we spend so much time, we just don't have the time to build all those tests to, you know, tests for conformance, and they really provide a lot of value. And I know just with us, Ethan and I have both, you know, spent a lot of time running those things and working through them, so thanks.
Great. Hello. I'm working at Motorola, and I use Lisp on my job, but I've put together this test suite just on my own time, which is why it's taken a while. I started working on it in 1998. Most of the tests were written between 2002 and 2004. By the way, I apologize for this little thing that's popping up at the bottom. I just noticed that, and I'm not sure how to get rid of it. Okay. I'm going to start off by talking about what the goals were for the test suite, why I wrote it, and more importantly, why I didn't write it. Then I'm going to describe the test suite proper, the conformance tests that the compiler writers are running to see just where they've screwed up. Then I want to talk about something else that I've worked on that actually could be a separate paper, but I don't believe in that salami science sort of thing that they were talking about the other day, so I've lumped it in with this one. And these are some more specialized testers that focused in and pound rather brutally on specific parts of Lisp implementations. And finally, I want to make some comments, just a few comments, on some weird implications that I found while going through the ANSI specification in detail. I'm not sure how important these last ones are, but I thought they were kind of amusing and somewhat bizarre. Okay. My primary goal in doing all this was to produce a tool to help implementers make their lists more compliant, and also to maintain compliance as they further modify their implementations. The latter one's actually important. A lot of people have been using the standard, or using the test suite, to maintain this compliance while they improve compiler optimizations, or while porting their implementations to new platforms. And the experience they've had with this is actually it's very helpful in that respect. Cam McGuire, the primary maintainer for GNU Common Lisp, for example, has used the random test suite to very quickly add integer unboxing optimizations to GCL, which I believe has had a significant positive effect on its performance. I had some secondary goals here. One was to familiarize myself more completely with the Common Lisp standard. Writing a test suite for a standard for a specification is actually a very good way to do that. I wanted to look at different testing methods. I'll talk some more about that in a bit. And also I wanted to test the standard itself. Go through, find contradictions, ambiguities, places where things just weren't specified enough to test. Okay. These are some non-goals, things I explicitly decided not to do. The test suite is not designed to measure the compliance of an implementation. So it's not intended to, okay, you run the test, you run the test suite, and you say, okay, it failed 1,054 tests, and that's some sort of measure of how bad the implementation is. Similarly, it's not designed to rank implementations. You can't say, okay, we ran the test suite, this failed more tests than that, therefore it's not as good an implementation as that. And finally, I also did not want to advocate any changes to the Common Lisp standard here. I'm just trying to interpret the standard as it is written, good or bad. For one of these earlier goals for measuring and ranking compliance, one of the implications for that is that I am free to add tests to the test suite in a way that I see fit. I don't have to add them in proportion to sort of the importance of different parts of the specification. So I can add hundreds of tests for some bizarre feature in the language that's never going to show up in practice, that arguably isn't very important in practice. Because I'm not trying to get some sort of number out, I don't care. All right. What were the sources for this test suite? Well, I based it all on the Common Lisp Hyperspec, the Hyperspec version of the ANSI standard. I didn't base it on the ANSI standard itself. I've also based it only on the normative parts of the Hyperspec, not on the examples, not on the notes at the end that were attached to it. Let's see. I've also based it on feedback from implementers. Lots of people have been running this test suite, and they've been very willing to provide me with feedback when one of the tests is screwed up, because I'm sure they don't want to fix something in a way that's actually going to be against the standard. And finally, there have been discussions on a number of complicated points on comptlang.lisp and by email. All right. Here are the implementations that I've run the test, or someone I know of has run the test suite on, and there's actually quite a few of them. Allegro. I've actually been running tests on Allegro for a while. Armed Bear Common Lisp, this next one is an interesting one. It's an implementation by Peter Graves, and he has been doing his implementation using the test suite to drive it as a kind of a test-driven development. So he is constantly telling me, okay, Paul, you haven't added this to the test suite yet. I can't implement it yet. So there are just a few things left, which I'll talk about at the end that still need to be added. C Lisp is the other GNU Common Lisp. There's apparently some sort of interesting interaction between the C Lisp people and other people. I'm not quite sure I understand that, but C Lisp is interesting in that it has a really fast compiler that doesn't try to do very much. So testing it was kind of interesting, and I'll show some results for that later on. You've all heard of Carnegie Mellon Common Lisp. ECL here is another Lisp in the AKCL-GCL family. It's benefited a lot, I think, from the test suite. Its compiler was in pretty dire shape before. It's in much better shape right now. GNU Common Lisp GCL is the other GNU Common Lisp. It, unlike C Lisp, isn't byte coded. It actually compiles down to machine language via generating C functions that are then loaded in. It's available in two forms. The usual form that people work with, I think the default form in Debian, is an old Lisp, a CLTL1. And as such, if you tried to run the test suite on that, it would not do very well at all. I'm not even sure if it would run. Whenever I build it and test it, I build it in ANSI mode. There's a way to configure that. And in fact, in Debian, if you've got that distribution, you can set an environment variable which causes another binary to be executed, the one with ANSI compliance. Right now, GCL isn't very ANSI compliant, even in that mode. The plan is in the 2.7 release series to work heavily on the compliance. Right now, CAM's been focusing more on supporting several applications that are using GCL for delivery. ACL2, which I think there'll be a talk about, Axiom, and Maxima. We've also run it on LispWorks, OpenMCL, and a lot of testing has gotten done on SteelBank Common Lisp. Okay, these implementations were not tested. I'm sure there are others. This is either because I didn't have them or because I tried them and they wouldn't work at all. WCL is like that. It's a CLTL1. I think it's just pretty much dead. If anyone wants to try some of these, particularly Symbolics, I'd be interested in seeing what happened.
We'll give it a go. We'll do it.
Okay. All right. To write the tests, I used Richard's RT package. And this is a very simple package. It was described in Lisp pointers back in 1991. There's a macro def test, lets you define a test with a name. It's given a form, which is evaluated. And when that form is to be evaluated, the test passes if the values returned are the expected values. And here are two examples. The first one's very simple, test plus one. That confirms that the plus operator, when evaluated with no arguments, returns the number zero. The next one is a test of flet, and this is a little bit more complicated. What this test is testing is that if you do a return from in the expression in an optional argument, then that is not within the block implicitly defined for the flet. It's actually that outer block there is the one it should branch to. These tests are both from the test suite. Aside here, Witter's package has a package name RT. And in fact, I had to change that for LispWorks because it already had a package RT. There are some tests of the package system that or testing package designators that are single characters. And in fact, a single character is a valid package designator. I have not made an attempt to confirm that the Lisp I'm testing against doesn't already have a package with that name. Not quite sure how I would do that. If that ever came up, we would just have to change the names in the package, or in the package tests. All right. In the RT package, it's very simple to run tests, either all the tests that you've defined or tests individually. Here's an example of testing a test involving decf. This one is testing that parts of the expression are evaluated in a certain specified order. This is from Common List of Standards, section 5.1.3. It should be the case that the setf there is executed before the value of x is retrieved by the decf macro form. In this particular implementation, the expected values of 0 and 0 weren't found. Actually, it did it in the wrong order and returned minus 1, minus 1. This is an actual failure from a real implementation.
Nice point.
I made some changes to RT to spruce it up and just make it more convenient. Here are some of them. RT, as it was originally defined, didn't catch errors. If you threw some sort of condition, it would break. There was a way to continue testing from the debug loop. Just issue the command continue testing. When we're running 20,000 tests and thousands of them may be failing, you don't want to have to keep doing that. So optionally, we can catch errors. That actually is the default. And just treat that as a failure and count it. RT originally executed the forms by eval. I added a switch to instead wrap it in a lambda, compile it in funcall. That wouldn't make much sense if RT was being used to test a Lisp user program. It does make sense here because it enables you to test the compiler. After I added that, the implementers of CLisp eventually noticed that option was there and went and tried it. And they noticed two things. First of all, the test suite was running twice as fast. And second, they found 10 new compiler bugs, several of which had been in there for over 10 years. The results are compared with a function I call equal p with case, which should be obvious what that does. Let's see. Test annotation. There are some tests in this. I've tried to add tests that everyone will agree any compliant implementation has to pass. However, there at the boundary, there can be differences of opinion. And so when it comes to situations like that, I still want the implementers to use the test suite. So I've added this facility where tests can be annotated with a note, with some sort of symbol. And then there's a facility for saying, okay, all the tests with this note on them, just disable them. So when we run all our tests, we won't run those, and we won't count them. Later in the talk, I'll talk about a couple of weird points in the ANSI specification with certain weird implications. And for both of those, an annotation was added so that implementers could ignore it if they want to. Again, because we're not using this to score implementations, I don't really care if this is cheating and if this changes their number. And the point of the test suite is to help them improve their implementation. A similar convenient thing for implementers is an expected failure list. They can add a list of expected failing test names. And at the end, when there's a report, it will report if there are any unexpected failures. That's useful if they have a number of tests that are failing, but they want to use the test suite as a regression test when they've just made a change. They want to see if they broke anything. Another point here, the original implementation of RT actually took quadratic time to run n tests. And that was fine if you had a test suite of 100 or 200 tests. It didn't really make a lot of sense if you have 20,000 tests. So I've changed it to run in linear time in the number of tests. Let's see. One question you might have about RT, the expected values are given there, and then it's compares against them with equal p with case. You might say, well, just put the test function into the test form itself and check whether it's T or nil. I prefer it this way because if the test does fail, you can immediately look at the expected and actual values and see what went wrong. Another problem with T and nil, although one I do have to deal with in the test suite, is there are a bunch of functions in the standard that are defined to return true. And many implementations return T for true, but not all of them do. And there were a number of places where I'd done EQ or equal or something like that, and this had screwed up on a number of implementations. So the test had to be modified so that these Boolean values were explicitly normalized to T. All right, this table gives a breakdown of the size of the test suite. The size there is in bytes. Test is the number of tests in each section. This is divided by sections of the standard. This is actually a little bit out of date. There have been 600 or 700 tests added since these numbers were collected. Most of the sections there are pretty self-explanatory. At the end here, down around there, MISC there is referring to a file that contains automatically generated tests. These specialized testers that I referred to that stress test various specific parts of the implementation, when those come up with failures, I turn them into ordinary tests and then add them back to the test suite. There are nearly 700 tests in that file right now. Infrastructure there is just the various utility functions and the like, RT itself. And then random here at the bottom is that contains those specialized stress testers. All right. Okay. Well, what has the test suite done? Okay. Here are some statistics from SBCL. I'm choosing SBCL because they were kind enough to fairly conscientiously document fixes to bugs from the test suite in their release notes. So I trolled back through their release notes from releases 078 through 090. That's over a period of not quite 3 years. And looked at all the bug fixes due to the ANSI tests and what part of the specification they came from. So dividing them among different parts of the specification was sometimes kind of problematic because they may have overlapped. I tried to do a best effort here. Some things in this table actually aren't parts of the specification, but they are specific kinds of failures. Typeinf there, those are failures due to the compiler doing type inference incorrectly or type propagation incorrectly. These tests here are other failures in the compiler. Eval/DCF, those are the evaluation, compilation, and data control flow tests, parts of the specification. As you can see, there were a lot of failures in the printer, and I think a lot of those were format bugs. And there were also some very weird tests of very weird bugs involving print readable. I'll talk a little bit later about how I found some of those.
Print readable or print readably?
Print readably. I'm sorry. Okay. As I said before, one of my goals here was to explore different kinds of testing strategies. So I've done several different kinds of testing here. Given them names here, I'm not sure they're appropriate. But simple tests are the sort of simple little forms you would expect to see in a test suite. Take this operator, apply it to these constants, you expect to get this result. They're not very powerful. They're easy to write. Okay. Exhaustive tests are a bit more complicated than that. Here we're trying to confirm that some predicate or property applies over some larger set of values. So maybe we're looping through, we have one or more loops looping through some sets of values and confirming that some predicate holds. And finally, I've employed randomization in a number of tests. The purpose there has been, well, exhaustive tests can have too much combinatorial explosion in some cases. And I'm trying to evade that by just randomly sampling a very large test space.
Yes. Did you ever consider weighting your random by looking at experimental statistics of usage of certain categories? Like test sequence functions have zillions of keyword arguments, and every latch point on those, you can find a latch point where there's going to be an error. So maybe you test some more than often because nobody ever uses the test mumble argument.
I have thought about doing some sort of weighting. I'm not sure it would be useful in the situation you're talking about there, because I think in that situation the sample space is small enough that we could still exhaustively go through it. However, I may still randomly test some of those just because it's more convenient to do it randomly. All right. Here's a common idiom that I referred to in the exhaustive test, which is confirmed that some property holds for all Lisp values. So the test suite has this variable star universe star, which contains a sample of all the different kinds of Lisp values I can think of. Conses and sequences and symbols and random states and things like that. And so it's going to map over that, and this is testing SXHash. It's confirming that for every object, the type of the hash code is an unsigned fix now. This actually found a bug in SBCL. In SBCL, when this was run, we discovered that the function SXHash returns nil on condition objects. This is actually how the test is written in the suite. I have to confess that this idiom appears again and again, and what I really should have done was written a macro saying, here's this predicate form, and here's the form we're trying to test, here's the predicate, and just check that somehow over star universe star or whatever. Mention a number of other test idioms at this point. In addition to we apply the operator to these arguments, do we get the expected value? Other things I like to test are error conditions. There are the exceptional situation entries, each dictionary entry in the hyperspec. I've tried to write tests for all of those. When there are type error conditions, I do this kind of mapping over values, and for all the values that are not in the type, I confirm that when you invoke the operator on that object, you get a type error. The other specified error cases are things like passing too many or too few arguments to an operator or to a function, having invalid keyword arguments, and...
too many arguments, not enough arguments.
Yes. Right. All of those are specified to be program errors, at least in safe calls. There's a macro which wraps the form in the proper locally environment where it's declared to be safe, and then does the evaluation.
Can we see an example?
Excuse me?
Can we see an example?
I don't have a slide here, sorry. I just wanted to mention that one gotcha on that is that the standard says that the error may be thrown at compile time. So I can't just put a form in one of these test forms in which that form occurs. I actually have to cons it up or call eval on it, so that it gets compiled, if it gets compiled at all, at when the test is executed. All right. Now I'm going to talk about randomized tests. The randomized testing has kind of a, I don't know, colored reputation in the testing business. Glenford Myers, in this seminal book, The Art of Software Testing, which came out more than 30 years ago, it's still on the bookshelves, he called it probably the poorest methodology of all. And well, other people disagree with that and have actually gotten good results from it. I've listed some examples here. The one you've probably all heard of is Barton Miller at the University of Wisconsin. He did something called fuzz testing on Unix utilities, which was, we're going to take some Unix programs and we're just going to send random bytes at them and see if you can crash them or hang them or whatever. And a surprising and embarrassing fraction of these programs died when he did that. A lot of buffer overflows and things.
Some RISC architectures you can freeze by sending random bits into the instruction stream.
Right. There's a program called CrashMe, which actually I've mentioned in my notes here. I didn't put on the slide. Another paper that I was impressed by was one from a fellow named McKeeman, who was at DEC when he did this. I think he's retired now, or maybe at Dartmouth. And what he did was he tested C compilers by generating random C code and then compiling and running the resulting programs. He had to jump through some hoops to confirm that the stuff he was generating actually made sense. There are things you can do in C if things overflow and whatnot, then that means the behavior is undefined. But he found lots of bugs in commercial C compilers doing that. Don Slutz, who was at Microsoft since left, he did a similar thing for SQL. He would generate large random SQL queries and send them to a number of database implementations, and had lots of fun doing that, exposed lots of bugs. More recently, a fellow named Christian Lindig at the University of Saarland, he did a very focused kind of testing doing random C procedure calls. He would have random types for the arguments, randomly have var args or not, and he would call it with random values and confirm that the values got passed in correctly. He found 14 bugs in various commercial compilers doing this. All right. As I said, random testing has kind of a colored reputation. Here are some objections you hear to it. One of the ones you see a lot in the testing literature is that it's inefficient. Well, you can do it with only this many tests if we follow, you know, X, Y, and Z testing methodology, but if we use random testing, it requires that many tests. Okay. Well, one problem with that is that it's assuming that the cost of running the tests is higher than the cost of creating the tests. My test suite contains somewhere over 20,000 tests, and it took me 3 years or more to create that. I mean, working on and off, not full time. I'm going to give an example later on where random testing was used to apply 200 million tests to a Lisp implementation. If I had written those tests at the same rate I could have manually created them, it would have taken me tens of thousands of years. So random testing, sure, the individual tests may not be as good, but you can generate many, many more of them. Another possible problem is irreproducibility. This may actually be a problem if you're doing random testing on some system with state, a real-time system with concurrency, things like that. That doesn't apply here, though. Common bugs are going to recur anyway, so you can, with random testing, you can just run the random tests again, and you will see that bug or similar ones soon enough. I've also tried to design the random tests so that when failures occur, it produces an output which says, okay, this is what it failed on. So you can then pull those values out and test them deterministically. As I mentioned before, when I ran my random stress testers, I would try to turn those failures into deterministic tests that were added to the test suite. Perhaps a more reasonable objection to random testing is that it ignores knowledge that you have about the program being tested. Most of the random tests are going to be, you know, bizarre nonsense. I mean, things people wouldn't do. And perhaps they aren't going to be focusing on the part of the program that you know is, or you suspect is, buggier. And that's a valid objection. Well, sometimes, though, the knowledge may not be available. I'm writing a test suite which is supposed to apply to any Lisp implementation. So I may know about some of the implementations. I don't know about all of them. The random tests work on all of them regardless. Another problem with knowledge you have about the program being tested is that it may be wrong. That is, you may think there are lots of bugs in this part of the program, but if you're wrong, you will miss the ones that are in some other parts. The random tests don't care. And finally, if you do suspect that there are tests, there are problems in one particular part of an implementation, you can design your tests to be biased towards testing that part. Some of the random testers I wrote actually do focus in on areas of Lisp implementations that I suspected would be particularly problematic.
Did that prove to be the case?
I found lots of problems there.
There you go.
Okay. All right. Where did I do randomized testing? Okay. I did tests of functions with many keyword arguments. So this is generate random input arguments, required arguments, and then for the keywords, generate random positions and sequences, random functions to apply for key and test and things like that. I didn't apply that to all of the operators in Lisp that this might apply to, but I did apply it to some. I applied it to remove, for example. In remove, I did find a bug in a commercial implementation.
What does many mean? More than 10?
I don't think that. Well, are there any with more than 10?
I don't know.
I think maybe one of the print functions does. And I did randomly test printing.
Okay. Write has more than 10.
Yes. Yeah, I think that may be the only one.
Well, you did test that you could write a user function with 35 keyword arguments.
With lots of keyword arguments, yes.
I think Clint has already done that for us.
Yeah. Okay. By the way, an alternate testing strategy for something like that would be something called pairwise testing, which you see a lot of in the literature. And this is where they say, okay, we can't test all combinations, you know, of arguments that are exponentially many tests. But what we can do is we can try each combination of pairs of arguments. Recently, last year, Bach and Schroeder published a paper which said, okay, let's go and test to see whether pairwise testing is really better than random testing. And they concluded to their dismay that, in fact, it wasn't. That if you just randomly choose arguments or choose these things you're going to add as inputs, and you find bugs just as quickly with random testing.
So that's one point, that when there's random testing, you often simply come up with the fact that something didn't work. And most handcrafted tests, even those that are crafted by a macro that generates thousands of tests, they're targeting some specific thing, and when it doesn't fail, you have found a very specific bug to fix.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean here. I mean, when we have a failure, we say, okay, it should have computed this, instead it computed that. It's not clear how you're going to get anything more than that out of a non-random test.
Usually it's up to us implementers to figure out why the test failed, or feedback to him why we think the test is wrong.
Yes.
Well, I was the implementer who wrote the test, and that's what I wanted to know. When regression by somebody else who came in and up with the source code, what it broke.
Well, there you're going to have to do some self-soul searching.
They're actually
the same bug twice. It always comes back up and tells you.
You're talking now about automated debugging instead of automated testing.
That's true. The purpose of test suites, you've got several purposes. One wasn't mentioned, the debugging aid that occurs during regression testing.
Right. My test suite is not intended to help in debugging, except that you can run the test and see if it fails or not. There are automated tools for example, going through a CVS log and figuring out what change caused the test to fail. Zeller and co-workers have been working on this with something called delta debugging. I've got a citation to that in the paper.
300 deltas in one bug.
Well, if you do it automatically, then well, it's not that hard.
As an aside, the random tests have been very useful as regression tests for people who are working.
Oh no, I don't disagree with that. Yeah, that's that. It's just that there's a lot more to testing than randomized testing. There should be. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Okay. Another random test I did was print read consistency of random objects. If print readably is bound to true, then it should be the case that when you try to print something, it either prints it in a form that when read back in gives you a similar object, or it throws a print readably, or print unreadable error, whatever the name of that condition is. So, print unreadable, yes. Okay, well, I went to town printing various kinds of random objects here, and I did this with all the other printer control variables sent to random values. So the radix and the print base and all this, things like that. Okay. So. And there are some surprising failures there. Some of the more obnoxious ones were when print pretty is turned on and I print S expressions that include Lisp keywords. Because often there are special pretty printing functions for forms with def on and things like that. And if you put them in very, very malformed forms, they often will, the pretty printer will break. Another one was printing of backquote things you get from backquote. So quote, backquote something. Often those things, when they're printed and read back in, aren't similar. Yes. A lot of random tests were written for math operations. I'll say some more about math operations later. I just want to say that testing floating point is annoying. Okay. Subtype. Subtype P is this function in Common Lisp which determines if one type is a subtype of another. It's allowed to give up in some situations, but when it doesn't, it should correctly determine this. And in many implementations, it did not. Random testing helped find a lot of things there. But the main place where I applied random testing was in testing Lisp compilers. And there are at least two test harnesses, that I wrote for doing that. One testing type inference, another testing just the compilers in general.
Oh, do you run the tests? Does your hard disk run all the tests in a fixed order, or do you run them in a random order to see whether some prior test has somehow upset the interpreter and...
Okay, that's a really good question. I'm not sure I have time to answer it right now. The answer is it runs them in a fixed order, but I have run them in a random order.
Right.
So I think there are no dependencies left right now. Okay. Oh, geez. Okay. subtype, what I did there was I generate random types, and then if one's a subtype of the other, I check that these other identities hold. And if it's not a subtype, then I check that this identity holds. And that found bugs. Here's an example of a bug from an actual implementation. Okay. All right. With compiler testing, with type inference, what I did was this. Let's go on to this. Type inference is very useful. I'm sure you'll agree, for doing things efficiently, but never mind that. What the type propagation tester did was this. Given some function or operator f, it would generate random arguments for it, and then evaluate that to see what the value should be. And then it would generate a random form in which some of those parameters are used as formals, some are just inlined as constants. The optimized levels are assigned randomly. The formal parameters are declared with random types. Given a value, I can generate a random type that contains that value. So something above it, from T on down to EQL. And then random the forms were put around various subforms. In some cases, I would also, instead of returning the result, I would assign it into a specialized vector. This would increase the opportunity for all the computation to be unboxed. And then I would compile that, apply it to the arguments that were formal parameters, and compare the results. Here's an example of that, a test. The name there is plus.1, but something was prepended on that to get the actual test name. It's testing plus with arguments that are integers. There are two arguments. This is an example of a form which would be generated by the random tester. This one actually didn't fail anywhere, but you can see the kind of things that go into it. Here are some tests that failed in two commercial implementations. First one, symbol p of a negative number gives a segmentation violation. And the second one here, I square root on something whose type is defined to be member of 4 and minus 1. Minus 1 is an illegal argument. Well, yes, but so what? What's interesting about that is the bug only failed if the negative number was in the second position of the member list there, the list of elements. It didn't occur in the first or the third or the fourth, only the second. But the random tester doesn't care. It will find bizarre things like that. And here's another one. This one was from SBCL. All right. Now, that was a simple random tester, but most of the random testing was done with something which generates random forms. And these are random integer-valued list forms that are just produced in a top-down way, but by fairly straightforward means. And then they're turned into two lambda forms, one of which is declared with type declarations, the other of which in which all the common list functions are declared not in line. And then one of them is compiled, and the other is evaled. And we check to see if the results are the same and if anybody broke. So if we did that, when I wrote this, I discovered this would produce bugs in all implementations within seconds of starting to run it. So nobody escaped. Most of the failures were assertion failures or type errors, either in the compiler or in the generated code. A minority of them were incorrect values, although there were some of those. What I get from that is that compiler writers really should put lots of assertions in their compilers. Bugs that actually crashed the lists were infrequent, which was fortunate. There are lots of problems in dead code optimizations, and I actually did this before I did the type propagation tester that I just described before. This found a lot of type inference bugs, particularly in integer arithmetic. And running these tests was very useful in debugging that in SBCL and CMUCL, and also in porting SBCL to 64-bit platforms.
What was the consequence of, say, fixed number type declaration wrong? Did it simply convert it to unboxed, or did it give it a float or something?
Well, in some cases, it would generate internal structures in which the types were inconsistent. The compiler would say, okay, this type we have for this thing here is inconsistent with the type I know it's going to be coming. Therefore, this code must never be reachable. We'll just delete it all. And so in some cases, the entire body of the function died, and you just fell through a bunch of no-ops down to the error code at the end saying improper number of arguments to the function. This is...
Yeah, that's a common problem. That's what you have to be sure to put something in there so that you don't get dead code elimination.
Yeah, well... It failed. They found the bugs. Here are some examples there. The first one there was a type propagation problem. This actually led to an incorrect value. These other two, I think, are dead code related. The first one was in SBCL. The second one in CMUCL.
Okay. By the way, that incorrect value is in safe mode or unsafe mode?
It was non-safe, I believe.
So that's legitimate, though, by CL standards, I think.
Well, no, because the compiler screwed up and introduced an internal form.
Okay.
I mentioned CLisp. This found 14 bugs in CLisp. It's amusing to go back to the CLisp SourceForge logs and look at some of the developer comments about some of these tests. Yeah, especially the last one, which I submitted after kind of a break from the previous 13, which had the comment, "I thought we were done with these."
Never done with these.
Yeah. Well, at this point, CLisp is not throwing any bugs from any failures from the random tester, except for big num overflows. Sometimes you happen to generate a form in which the integer gets too big for the implementation. I don't really consider that to be a bug in the implementation. I estimate something like 200 million iterations of this random tester on CLisp. That took, a month or so of runtime on my home machine. So the cost of doing that, ignoring the cost of writing the random tester, is, a few $100s. How much would it cost people to manually write 200 million tests? It's probably more than a few $100s, even in India. Okay.
Okay. Did most Lisps receive that level of hammering?
Most did not. CLisp has a very fast compiler because it doesn't do very much. It just goes to bytecode, so it can go through the thing really fast. The others still did run millions of tests, though.
Yeah.
Okay. We're just about done, so let me just talk about this. We do automated pruning on the forms that are generated by the random tester. I initially didn't have this. We would generate a form with 1,000 consoles in it. It would fail. That's useless. So I tried to prune them down by hand. That was tedious. So I wrote an automatic pruner that would simplify the form until it got to a minimal core that still exhibited a bug. May not be the same bug, but it doesn't matter. Okay. This was incredibly valuable, and at the same time, it also limited the random tester because I cannot generate forms that cannot be. I don't want to generate forms that can't be effectively pruned. So if I try to prune the form and it makes it be type incorrect, be incorrect Lisp, then I lose the bug. From that point on, the error is that the thing is wrong Lisp, not that the compiler is screwed up. So I've got some ideas for fixing this, but I'm running out of time, so I can't talk about them. All right, comments on the standard. I think I'll just skip over this. You can read the paper to get the details on that. Okay, what time is it? All right. Any questions?
Given the huge number of handwritten tests that you have, there is the question of the maintainability of the test suite itself that arises. So my question is, like, for instance, how can you force the developers of GCL, for instance, to actively maintain the test suite at the same time as maintaining the code of GCL itself?
Well, if the common Lisp standard were changing at a lightning pace, then that might be a problem. But it's not changing, and I'm not sure if it's ever going to change. So once the tests there are conformant with the standard, there's no reason for them to change.
All right. So let me rephrase. Maybe suppose that one of the tests finds an error in an implementation. So you fix the bug. You're not sure that you're not going to introduce a new bug, and by fixing the first one, and then how can you figure out that there is already a test that might find the new bug that you're maybe introducing right now?
Well, you can run the suite again. The suite is not guaranteed to detect problems. The fact that a particular test does not detect a particular bug is not a bug in that test. So there's no reason to change the test. There might be a reason to add more tests. The other question is you might have is traceability from the tests back to the spec. How do you know you've covered everything in the spec?
Right.
And that is an issue that basically there's nothing to do except go through the tests exhaustively, make sure you've covered everything.
Whenever our bear is done.
Yeah.
I find you're a little impressive when you say that, so don't take this as too much of a criticism. But back to this point about being able to track where the bug was, at the very minimal, I mean, in regression and development, you're going to start with the kernel, the base, and then the full complement list. You're going to test each phase.
Mm-hmm.
So who tests the testers? Who guards the guardians of society?
That's
you do. And you have to build your test in such a way that you can guarantee that the test mechanism itself is not fooled into thinking that everything is passing.
The test suite is tested. It's tested by every implementation that runs it. And there's a large set of those. And many of the implementers have been sending comments back to me saying, this test is screwed up for this reason. The test standard doesn't really require that. So I've been removing invalid tests that way.
I'm not thinking of invalid tests, but the legitimacy of testing the thing that you depend upon for later veracity of the resulting test. Am I making myself?
You're wondering if the test suite is screwed up and won't find
no,
a problem?
No, the test suite itself is not screwed up. There's a bug in the implementation such that the test suite is systematically spoofed into thinking that everything works.
So you have test forms for RT.
Right. There are test forms for RT in there.
But you before you can run them, you have to verify that some kernel level of Lisp is not lying to you. It's the same thing as dead code elimination. All the tests run, and they run quick.
Mm-hmm.
They don't tell you anything, right?
I suspect it would be hard to have a bug like that in an implementation.
Well, and in all implementations, you've run the test suite through REST.
Yes, yes.
I think we need to kind of, so people can go on to the next, if people are changing tracks or something.
Okay.
To take the rest of the questions offline or something?
Yeah.
Okay. And next talk starts at 3:00.